Thoughts and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio, of course, Pete Fisher. It is Friday, Life in the Fishbowl, and our special guest this afternoon is Member of Parliament for Northumberland Peterborough South, Kim Rudd. Kim, welcome to the studio.
Well, always a pleasure to come in, especially on a Friday.
I know, it's a nice weekend, and I know you got the Robbie Burns dinner tomorrow you'll be attending.
I do.
But then it's back to the house.
It is. Last night I was actually at the wrap-up dinner for the Norwood Fair. They had their best year ever. They're going to have their 150th anniversary in 2018. Earlier this week, I met with the Farm Workers Union, had soup with them, and it's been a busy week. And yes, I head to Ottawa tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
After the Robbie Burns there.
Back to the grind. Any idea what we can expect? Sort of, is there anything bubbling in Ottawa right now, legislation that you think is moving through? I mean, obviously it's brand new, right? So what's been introduced in the House thus far?
Well, a couple of things were, and they were more around getting moving, getting going, getting a couple of our promises around the tax cut, et cetera, in for January. It's mostly around the budget. As you know, Minister Morneau has been going around the country talking to folks, hearing priorities.
Is he putting out T-shirts for that cross-country tour?
I don't think he is. I certainly have not received one.
Okay, might be a suggestion. Yeah. I don't know.
It's it's really about the budget, because everything that will flow from the budget. And, they say, a day in politics is like a year in everything else. Well, certainly with what's happened to the economy, even since, I'm going to say, November or December, it has just stark changes.
Yeah, we see the markets crashing all over the place. The TSX, and I mean, everything's up today, apparently. I don't know how high or how much, but I don't know if they've even been able to make up for the losses thus far. Well, they must have been. Today, the TSX was up 353 points. So everything seems to be up. The Canadian dollar's back over 70 cents. So obviously those conversations in Davos are doing good.
Apparently. Well, and we have to remember that a lot of this is cyclical. Mm-hmm. We have lived through these cycles before.
Yep.
I think we were talking amongst a number of us in Ottawa a couple of weeks ago, and it was really about the revolutions, whether it was the Industrial Revolution and we're really saying that this is an innovation revolution. It is a technical revolution, and there's lots of opportunity out there. We have to acknowledge it's a problem, no question. And I think there's been a lot of that. But then we sort of have to get past that and say, we can fear it, we can be afraid of it, and yes, we have to acknowledge it. But where's our solution? The only way right now we can go, in my opinion, the only responsible thing we can do and the only possible thing we can do as Canadians is go up.
Absolutely.
So how do we do that? That's the question.
How do we get off the ground? Now, we do have a caller on the line. I believe he's still there anyway. Nope, he's not there. Let's see, maybe the other line. Nope, he appears to have gone.
Must be his brother.
So I want to thank Ed for calling in. Sorry we didn't get to your call, Ed. But if you want to call back, please feel free to do so. And anyone who wants to call in, by the way, 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391.
My thing is, Kim, tell me about, because I haven't spoke to you really lately since the election, what's it been like for you in Ottawa? We talked a little bit off the air, but I mean, is it a different, like you said, you're extremely busy before this. But this brings it to a whole new realm of...
It is a realm that I think I certainly couldn't have imagined, so I think the average person can't imagine either. It is... there's so much to learn, although I feel like I've been on a very quick learning curve. My advantage is I've been connected before the election for a good number of years in Ottawa through committees, et cetera. So I had a bit of a running start, which was very helpful to me. As you know, I'm the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Natural Resources, and that's been a learning curve. 50% of the staff in the ministry are scientists. So I get briefings. I probably had 20, 25 hours of briefings, and I'm learning a lot. We're responsible for...
pipelines?
Those two. Explosives. Why does everybody say pipelines first? How about explosives? I mean, who knew we were responsible for explosives?
How come you're responsible for explosives? Forgive me.
Well, because it has something to do with originally when, you know, a lot of these things were determined before any of us were around, has to do with mines.
Okay.
Because if you think of it, that's really the first exploration that was done, whether it was gold or coal or nickel or what have you. So it's around mines, earthquakes, all of that. So it has been, I was saying off air, one of the things, I'm pretty well, when I'm in Ottawa, I'm pretty well out the door by 7 a.m. and I'm probably not back until 8:30, sometimes a bit later.
Yeah.
And I have house duties, which mean... I have to be in the house, and if there's votes, you're on house duty till 6:30. But if there's votes, you can be there till midnight. Really? We hope not.
On votes, has there been a discussion in caucus on how votes are going to be handled? Are we going to see the same everyone in the lockstep? I mean, one of the criticisms of not just the previous government but the government before that actually was this inability to have your own vote and to really represent your constituents. I mean, if your constituents, I mean, I can understand a matters of confidence that you'd have to vote in favor with the government, but in other areas. How free are the votes going to be? Any idea on that?
The Prime Minister has made it very clear that there will be more free votes, and that the only thing that there's an expectation that we vote on with the government are on things of confidence, the budget, for instance, and in anything in the platform that we ran on.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've elected us because we said we're going to do this and we in fact do it, you can't really then say, oh, well, no, not.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because, of course...
Actually, you brought up, Dave, but okay.
The vote issues.
One for Kim on that one.
Are you keeping score today? Pete's keeping score. The other day, Rex Murphy was talking about how the Trudeau government is he's the only Prime Minister in history of Canada who will be better off by breaking his electoral votes or his promises rather than honoring them. And we're specifically talking about bringing in the refugees and the CF-18s. I mean, many people are now saying stop with the CF-18s. I mean, I know he got hung up on by one of their family members of the Burkina Faso thing because they don't think he should stop the bombing and what have you. Is Rex out to lunch on this one? I mean, is that something do you think the Prime Minister is looking at this point, breaking those promises, key promises?
Rex gets paid to, and I think thoroughly enjoys the role he has, which is the person to sort of throw all those things against the wall and see if they stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Prime Minister, I guess one of the things, and I stood up, I don't know if you know this, I've stood up in the House of Commons twice. And talked in the first week, and it was not on my ministry. It was actually around this very issue in terms of the fighter jets. And it was an opposition day, so they get to ask us questions. And Mr. Dion had answered a few, and I got up. And I said, because what I was hearing from the opposition, as you know, the Prime Minister has made it very clear that we are setting the tone. And I am so fully in support of that. So I responded in saying, just I want to be clear, are you suggesting that as things change in a very fluid situation around the world in these instances, that we shouldn't change our path? We should always stick to the path that was chosen and not consider other factors. And of course, the response was a speaking note. But I truly believe what I said, and frankly, you'll find I won't say it if I don't believe it. It's kind of who I am. Because, I think it was someone in the U.S. actually was asked this question yesterday, I think, and he said, you know, Canada is such an important part of the coalition. they will determine, as a country, as every other country has done, what their best contribution is. And we're one of the majority of the countries not do, majority of the countries in the coalition are not bombing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to remember that.
Yeah.
So there are lots of people on this file, ministers, ministry people who are, you know, our Minister of Defense, amazing man. He's out there having these discussions. And do you know what? Let's let him, who knows what he's doing,
who's actually
help us
experience.
Make the best decision.
Well, that's
Rex
the other...
Murphy, I don't think, has ever been in the armed forces and fought in this kind of conflict. So it's sort of sometimes I think easy to be, no disrespect to Rex, but it's easy to be an armchair quarterback.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I was happy with, because the refugees were supposed to be coming here at a certain date, and I was always worried that it shouldn't be a date put on that. So because it was delayed, I'm happy. Like, as I say, because the safety, get them over here, absolutely. But the safety is also paramount, to go through the right channels, to, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's. So, you know, if somebody is complaining about that they didn't keep their promise of a certain date,
is that not keeping your promise, or is that again adjusting the timeline to fit the reality?
Absolutely.
And it wasn't
like you say, it's a fluid situation.
It is a fluid situation, and you know, one of the biggest. I talked to Minister McCallum, Minister Philpott, when I was in Ottawa during that all time, and one of the challenges, of course, was the resources on the ground that we needed to have in there. And you just can't take a bunch of people and say, oh, you go over to Lebanon or Jordan or wherever it is, and we'll put you in there to process refugees. Well, first of all, you speak the language. First of all, do you have the skill set? So there was so the ramp up from the, let's call it, administrative side, was a lot more than, you know, took some time.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's a good point, because it seems to me that the previous regime was in neutral rather than in either forward or reverse. There's just this neutral that was happening. I mean, I think over the course of 3 years, they processed just under 1,200 people.
That's it.
Yeah.
So those were those numbers. We're going to take our first break of the hour, but we will be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio are Pete Fisher from Northumberland Today and, of course, Member of Parliament for Northumberland, Peterborough South, Kim Rudd. And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest in the studio, Kim Rudd, your Member of Parliament for Northumberland, Peterborough South, and Pete Fisher, our regular guest here on Fridays for Life in the Fishbowl. Now, you were talking about the changing and fluid situation in the region where we currently have troops acting as aides, as educators, trainers, as well as those who are providing air support. But what we've seen, I mean, let's face it, we've been in that region now for this particular conflict, more than 10 years, almost 15 years. We've been active within that region for close to 25 years. The approach that I'm hearing from the Trudeau government is we're going to be trying to find a diplomatic solution here. I think, and maybe it's just me, you know, call me crazy, but after 25 years of combat, I mean, even Vietnam had to have a diplomatic solution. I mean, there's going to have to be a diplomatic solution. Is that the role the Prime Minister is hoping to play in this, from your perspective?
Well, I don't think the Prime Minister's sort of laid out exactly the plan, but I would say certainly one of the things he did was he sent the diplomats around the world all letters saying basically now you can go back to doing your job and be diplomats, and I think that's good, because if you're going to change in any situation in the world, if you want to open a dialogue, you have to have people there. They're empowered to open that dialogue. So there's that. But I think the reality is, to your point, that when you have tried to do something the same way for so long and it is not working, it morphs itself into a different, we call it something different. It kind of moves around. But the reality is it's not getting better. So what's the alternative? And I think that's part of the discussions that are happening right now in lots of places, whether it's the G20 or whether it's Davos or wherever. There's conversation around economics, but there's also conversations around general issues of the world.
Well, you know, you mentioned a plan or whether there is a plan or not. I think that's probably, that's getting the most airplay of anything. Not whether or not he's pulling the jets out, but the idea of make a decision. Let the Canadians know what the decision is.
I have great faith that the Prime Minister will let Canadians know. But again, we have choices in so many of the things. I know people are anxious. We got elected October 19th. We've only been back in the House
for
7 days.
People want change on the 20th.
I want to know
by the 20th what the plan is.
Well, and I guess, you know, I said this to someone the other day. The way I look at it is we have, as a government, and we're doing this with my minister, we're doing it across the country, we're doing round tables where, you know, oil companies, Aboriginals, community members, everyone's getting around the same table and having the conversation together instead of just having it with this group or that group or that group. And we're actually...
And everybody can speak.
It's energizing, I will tell you. So I think that we're doing it differently. We're not saying this is what we've decided and you policy people figure out a way to fit it in. We're saying, people, what do you think we need to do? Policy people, try and come up with a policy, and then we will massage it as government, and then we'll put it in. It's a different way of doing it. Does it take a bit more time? Sure does, but I'd rather get it right.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's amazing. Well done.
But this is the thing, right? I mean, you can throw out a solution, but if it's not actually just a solution, if it's not even a Band-Aid, if it's just a...
It sounds good.
If it's just aesthetic, then obviously we're looking for more.
Well, I try not to get partisan. I look at those omnibus bills that the previous government put out. Mm-hmm. There were things in there that had nothing to do with research, consultation, anything. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to the long-form census. Yeah. Well, you know, what was the rationale behind that?
Yeah. And Tony still hasn't told anybody what his rationale was.
But now he thinks we should reinstate it, so it's all good.
Well, and speaking of flippy floppy, the health minister, the former health minister, now is saying that she wants the government to expedite legislation on marijuana because she says that she has concerns. So bringing it to a local perspective, we've got a company here in town, FV Farmers Inc. They're at the craft plant. They have been standing in line to get authorization, to get some movement forward. They've spent a whole lot of money on this facility. The previous MP said, well, you know, there's a huge lineup of people that want to get this. But part of the reason there's a huge lineup is because these people were lined up at a window where there was a gone to lunch sign on the window, and the people just never came back from lunch. So the question I have to you as the Member of Parliament for Northumberland Peterborough South, have you been approached by these guys? And is there some way that we can expedite the process so these guys can provide the jobs they say they want to bring here?
Well, I'm very aware that they're there. I know there have been conversations, certainly the Mayor of Cobourg as well. Had a conversation with Gill about this. There is, there's a process, as you know, former chief and now member of parliament and parliamentary secretary Bill Blair has been put in charge of this file in terms of the legalization part.
Yep. Well, the legislation surrounding the reform.
Correct. Yeah. But there's the licenses were granted by Health Canada, and that is Minister Philpott. And I know this has been brought to Minister Philpott's attention. I'm not saying specifically this site, but there are others. There are some flaws in the current legislation that they are looking at and dealing with. And I won't go into all the details about it, but again, going back to getting it right, legislation was put in. There were things that nobody contemplated because they didn't necessarily take the time and talk to the people who are going to implement these things. And
just to be clear for the listeners out there, I mean, the legislation that was brought in, first of all, the legislation was introduced by the Ministry of Justice. It wasn't introduced by the Ministry of Health. The mandate that was put forth by the Supreme Court of Canada was around health and health and safety and how that was going to affect people who were sick. But the legislation that was brought in completely discounted, didn't even discuss that aspect of it. It was simply a matter for the judiciary. So I can see clearly why that would be a problem if this is a matter for the health minister's portfolio.
So it is being... Trust me, it's being looked at. I expect there will be, as we go back next week and over the next weeks, you're going to be hearing more about not just this, but lots of other things.
One thing that I have along those lines, if I can ask, and I know that there has been some incidents in this area where growers, legal growers, have been caught over their limit.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, not a perfect world. But the issue that I have and that other people have, and I can tell you that some police officers have, mm-hmm. is that these growers don't even get their license suspended. And what I have an
I can tell you why.
Why?
See, because that's where some of the misinformation. I am aware of these situations.
Okay.
Have met with, at a fairly high level, police as well as others. And this is one of the flaws in the legislation I'm talking about. So the grower does not have the license in the instance you're talking about. So if you had a prescription for medical marijuana, you don't have to grow the plants yourself. You can provide that prescription to someone else to grow them for you.
That's right.
So if someone has this prescription and this grower gets 100 prescriptions, they're growing a lot. So the reason they're not having their license taken away is they, in fact, don't have a license.
That they've...
They're growing on behalf of a licensee.
On behalf of other, maybe 100 people.
So, but with that person that they gave permission
then
to
Then the license goes back to them because they didn't know.
But the grower has to have a license.
No,
the grower's not licensed. The grower is growing on behalf of.
You could grow in a third area, in other words, you don't have to, Kim Rudd doesn't have to own the land that Kim Rudd is.
You could own the land. But so in that, and this is one of the flaws in the legislation, it doesn't say, when it was contemplated, it was that if you had a prescription for 6 plants, you were going to grow them in your house or your backyard to take care of your own need.
Yeah.
But then, as people often try and get around these things or find a way to maybe...
Mm-hmm.
Yep. One said, oh, don't worry about doing it yourself. I have greenhouses.
Yep.
I'll take all these prescriptions. I'll grow them.
Yep.
And you're right. And then they're growing their own.
Yeah.
Instead of you growing 6 plants, you've handed over your thing to grow your 6 plants. The guy who's taken them over has taken yours and 10 other people, so now he's got 60 plants.
And then maybe growing a few of his own.
Exactly.
But the thing is, shouldn't he even be like, you know, okay, so can't take that license away from that person because he or she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But that person, I don't think, should still be allowed to
grow. No, and they aren't. Anyways, there's lots to this get into.
This is the nuances that we were talking about. I thought you were going to bring up the security concern.
No, but
because one of the
security concerns
that is a security concern, but I'm just saying there are things about this I can't talk about.
Yeah. But I'm going to go for a drive tomorrow and all.
Right. No, but
cuz I'm going to see I'm going
to
check on that.
Just to say it is on the radar. People are aware. And the solution is to the police can't do it. I mean, it's a problem because of the legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have to address the legislation.
You can understand the frustration by policing communities.
Oh, I heard it. Yeah. I've heard it. Yeah. Yes, no, absolutely understood.
And that's genuine, and it's genuine frustration.
Sure.
But this is one of the reasons why the Supreme Court struck down the legislation in the first place. I mean, more than 15 years ago, when this first came to a head in the Supreme Court, when Mr. Chrétien was the Prime Minister, he was given 7 years to come up with new legislation and never did. So when the Harper government came along, the legislation hadn't changed from the time the Supreme Court had said, get rid of it or we will. And then he came in with this new version, which was supposed to be nuanced through that Ministry of Health, but ended up being a law and order initiative because, of course, of the law and order angle. So what you've seen is just a confusing hodgepodge of regulations that
nobody can enforce.
Well, exactly, because in some instances, the regulations overlap one another.
Yeah.
Jurisdictions,
like, for instance, the licensing issue, that's because you're not licensing the grower. The license goes to a person who has the ability to grow it, and they, if you will, farm it out to someone who does do it.
Yeah. And to your point that you didn't bring up, but I know we've had this discussion ourselves, is around the security. And if you look at the facility in Bowmanville, you look at what the one locally here is setting up, that is the vision, in my opinion, for this. The security is tight.
Mm-hmm.
Their food-grade facility, so is the one in Bowmanville. They're inspected. They have a... it was a boom, honestly, to the postal workers, to the post office, because it's, you know,
people
being mail
stuff.
Ordered,
yeah.
kind of.
Yeah.
It really is. So,
well, I know a number of people who actually receive a package once a week
yeah.
or two every two
yeah.
weeks.
Yeah.
They get it through UPS or whatever the postal.
And because the technology or the innovation is becoming so good in this area for treating things like epilepsy and MS and what have you, is
irritable bowel syndrome.
All of those. I know a family where the young child gets theirs on baked in cookies because and the seizures are non-existent now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy.
So it works.
It works.
It does work.
And so we have to find a way because, first of all, it is often the only thing that relieves some of these conditions that we, mm-hmm. for years, I mean, think of epilepsy, think of MS. So we have to, again, I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but might take a little bit longer. We've got to get this right.
Absolutely.
Or we find ourselves in situations like that.
Absolutely. Do you think that, and as I say, I don't know this, maybe this is, I'm simple when it comes to this stuff, but do you think the government, though, should grow this, or should it be put out like it is being put out to businesses? Like
I don't think it's a government's job, just like alcohol. I don't think it's a government's job to create and bottle. Yep. It is private companies, but it's regulated by governments. And we have to remember that provincial governments, at the end of the day, do have the decision-making process on what happens with distribution. And, you know, I know Ontario is talking about the LCBO or similar, but if you think of the LCBO, they do have a secure distribution system. They have secure facilities. There's a whole, and every province will do it in their own, just like they do now. You know, you can be 18 and buy alcohol in the Dépanier in Quebec, or you'll be 19 and buy it in LCBO.
Here. And last question for me on this: do you think that anyone should have the right to buy marijuana, or should it just be for?
Oh, I think that there's going to. From what I'm hearing from people, is there's going to be two streams. There's going to be because the medical marijuana is very different from the recreational marijuana. The medical marijuana is. It's like crafting medicine.
It is grown for specific reasons,
and they can make it to. treat different things. So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. The recreational marijuana, somebody's going to make a decision on that. And there are people who are studying this and looking
That's not in your portfolio, I guess.
Well, it's not. I will vote on it at some point. But, one of the things that I am encouraged by through this whole process is, and I think that's why 63% Canadians support it now, is because there's been people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to people who I've known for years who are my age and say, oh, yeah, you know, we're still smoking. And I didn't know. And I think what it's doing is it's getting that conversation to a point where someone's – because there's always a question about addiction. And I know, and you might as well put it out on the table, it's always the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
There are addictive personalities. And people will become addicted to different things at different times. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we consider that when we do this. That's why the safeguards. So what's the age? I mean, every province will decide. It might be 25. It might be. But I know that it will be harder for a 14-year-old to get marijuana, just as it is alcohol or cigarettes, than it is right now buying it on the street corner. And we'll know what's in it. One of my big concerns with what the kids particularly are getting on the street is if you're a drug dealer, why aren't you going to put something in there that mix in that's stronger so they're coming back to you more? That's a huge concern I have.
No, for sure.
Quality control.
We're going to take a break here, folks, but we will be right back. You are listening to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. We will be right back. And you can follow me on Twitter as well, at Legon66. Joining me in studio, Pete Fisher and Kim Rudd. We are.
I don't know. You guys must have been having a really happy hour Friday before I got here. That's all I can say.
I want to ask before we're done, and this is, I'm going to put Kim on the spot.
Oh, dear.
And I will say, I voted for Kim. I've never done this before, but I had her sign on my front lawn. I don't belong to any political party, but that's where I stand. So I want to ask Kim, as we talked about marijuana, and I hope you don't mind this, and you probably know where I'm going with it now. Ever tried?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. And Dave, I think I know where you stand anyhow, so I'm not even going to ask you.
Yeah, I've tried it.
Within the past hour?
not today.
Think back to the 70s.
Exactly.
I was 80s. A small child in the 70s. See, for me, it was the 80s are a write-off. So,
The 80s were the best time. Stuck in the 80s. Fisher is stuck in the 80s.
He is stuck in the 80s.
I love the 80s.
So jobs. What is happening with the jobs front here locally? Can you give us any information? What's happening from a federal perspective, anyway? On what's, I know you're doing consultations. I know that they will be. You'll be rolling them out here as part of the budgetary talks. But jobs.
Jobs. Well, jobs are again. I'm going to go back to the economy and. So many of the things that we are doing right now as a government are being looked at through two lenses. One, the environmental lens, and the other is the economic lens. I'm meeting with the Northumberland Manufacturers Association. I think it's next week, but it could be, I'm not sure. I have been meeting around the riding with businesses.
Well, you met the farmers.
I met the farmers. I'm meeting with a number of the folks in Ottawa. I'm meeting with the nuclear industry in Ottawa as well as OPG. As you know, the refurbishment that OPG announced will be fabulous for us. We're certainly in the employment area. The reduction in commodities in general have affected some of the local businesses. Cameco certainly was having some slowdown. However, I'm hearing that things are picking up. I also, just in terms of nuclear is in my mandate, and the minister has given me the lead on nuclear. So I'm kind of excited about that. You know, it fits in my riding. I know everybody cringes. I don't get
it. Speaking of explosives.
No.
And again, you and I were talking before about how some innovations have been made. There's something called 4-in-1, if I can remember.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So China is one of the biggest markets for nuclear. And I think, don't quote me on the number, but around 250 new reactors. And there has been a process, and this is innovation will be the key. We are one of 20 other countries, I believe, signed on to something called Mission Innovation at COP21. And it will, that's the way our economy will get going. That will be the next revolution will be around innovation. And they've developed a process where light water reactors, and 80% of Cameco's business is light water reactor fuel for light water reactors. Four light water reactors can feed a CANDU reactor. So think of the waste reduction, because in fact CANDU, someone said to me, they're basically burning dirt, right? The spent, the leftover. So what that does is it makes our CANDU reactors a market. We own the technology. The other thing we own that I was not aware of till or hadn't thought of, I guess, until one of my briefings, is that we also own the refurbishment technology, which is huge. These reactors have to be refurbished. They have to be done responsibly. You know, you know what's going on right now with the refurb that just happened and what's going to be going on, and it takes years. So that's our technology. That's our innovation. So we're creating a whole industry around that. And I met with some folks from UIT and Durham College this week or last week, and talking to them about what about the courses? You know, what about the programs that are going to feed this new stream of technical expertise? And, you know, they're aware of it, not quite there yet, but it's an opportunity. And the other thing that's really interesting is something called mini nuclear reactors. They anticipate they'll be on stream in 10 years. And what they do is they're, I go mini like this, but they're a little bigger than that. But they are the thought process is around remote communities, remote, so mines. Let's use the Ring of Fire. You know, that's a province, lots of things going on. Don't know when it'll happen. But you can actually put a mini reactor there to fuel, if you will, or service the whole project. And they last for a certain period of time, a lot shorter than the bigger ones, but they can be replaced fairly easily. So there's some real innovation
what
going on.
What about disposal for them? Like
they're refurbished.
Also,
there's it's a continual cycle.
Yeah.
You know, there's work being done on the waste from the reactors right now. I think they're down to, the province is down to 5 sites. That's something else that's in process, and there's lots of expertise working on that. In terms of other local jobs, to your point about the facility here getting going with the marijuana, that's job creation. Mm-hmm. Brand New Foods has extended what they're doing, and
well, nothing goes together like food and pot.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Food and sweets.
Well, you know, apparently we have the largest kale hydrator in the world.
Yep.
Really?
This riding.
That's a reality. That's bona fide. See, and this goes to what the Prime Minister was saying at Davos the other day. Everything that you've just mentioned, the 4-in-1, the refurbishment, the technology that we hold, I mean, that's taking that resource commodity, but it's being resourcefully used. That's the resourcefulness that the Prime Minister was talking about. I mean, it really is. I mean, and some people, because a lot of people got a little weird about that. I know CBC did a thing on PNP a few days ago where there was this discussion about resources and resourcefulness. And I thought, first of all, I thought it was kind of petty. But the reality is, that's what we're talking about. That's how we're going to peddle Canadianism, if you will, Canada
and
to the world.
Let me just tell you, some of the local manufacturers that, and there's, you know, when we had the manufacturing slowdown, we all know, some places closed. Some places just still have the footprint for manufacturing, but just reduced their capacity because their orders were less, et cetera. Well, with the dollar the way it is, one local manufacturer I was talking to, he says, we've gone back to the original size and we can't keep up. So, you know, there's always this, we have to acknowledge out in Calgary, oil sands out in Alberta, they're hurting a ton.
Mm-hmm.
The unemployment, and I understand they're going to really feel the pinch in probably the next 9 months or so, mm-hmm. because the packages will have
expired,
been used
and
the money's
been spent.
And, you know, it's a terrible, I mean, my husband Tom walked out the door about 8 years ago. Now, in a different situation, obviously, but still the emotional.
Yep.
It's, you know, you work for a company for 31 years and all of a sudden you're not there anymore.
Exactly.
That's your life.
Yeah.
So people are trying to figure out what they're going to do with their life. Do they stay? Do they go?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I said to someone, it's acutely being felt in Alberta, but we can't forget it's being felt across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're in Newfoundland with the oil, whether you're in the potash mines, look at
what's... I said this to you when
potash,
I spoke with you the other day, that we have people in this riding who
were
doing that commute, you know, where they'd fly to Alberta for 10 or 14 days, come back home for a week, and then fly back out there for 10 or 14 days. And, I mean, that was their job, and they were being paid well. And those jobs are gone, to your point with the potash. I mean, the facility that's closing in Nova Scotia is going to decimate that town.
It is.
It's the, because, you know, we talk about, you know, job creation and we talk about the good jobs. But when you know, we felt this in Coburg when Kraft went the way of the buggy whip. I mean, the reality is those were good paying jobs.
Absolutely.
Collins and Aikman, same thing, good paying jobs. And what are those people making now? So they went from making, you know, decent money to probably half of what they were making.
And you can see that effect because they have less disposable income,
mm-hmm.
so they're not spending money. So, and to your point about the 200 or so that were flying out and coming back, yes, they bought homes in this riding. Their families are here. And now they're coming back and thinking, where am I going to find a job that pays me $110,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I look at my mortgage and it's all those things. So it's being felt, you know, if for families, the Canada Child Benefit that will be announced in the budget will help. The middle class tax cut will help.
Mm-hmm.
The making sure EI is there when they need it. And you know, we're talking about reforms to that.
Which is greatly needed here in Ontario.
It is. So they're short. So we're doing some things to mitigate it. But the reality is we have to grow the economy because we're not going, those are just helpful stopgap things till we get to where we need to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of, because one of the problems with what we're seeing here is that, you know, skilled laborers, we're not seeing people getting their tickets, if you will, in welding and bricklaying and all of those skills trades that are being needed, especially now if we're going to be talking about infrastructure development and building things. And yet, unless you're on unemployment insurance, there really are no programs for people to get retraining. There's always this connection to EI. You have to be on EI to qualify for this program, or you have to be on EI to get this benefit. What about the people whose EI has run out, mm-hmm. that now they're on social assistance, if you will, workfare here in Ontario? I mean, the same access to those programs just doesn't exist.
Well, and there are some programs that if you've been in EI within a certain period of time that you can go back and do some retraining. But you're absolutely right. It is... I hate it because it sounds like cliche, but we do really have to train people for the skills of tomorrow, mm-hmm. not the skills of today. And that's hard for people to get their heads around. And so the reforms are being looked at. Mm-hmm. There's a huge economic development piece as well as a training piece. And I just want to put a plug in for our summer student summer grants program. We launched it this week. If you're a not-for-profit, it's 100% funded summer student, 16 to 25, I believe, is the age group. If you're a municipality, government, or a business of under 50 people, you'll get 50%. And so, and it runs the gambit. We actually get to have a say to some degree on sort of who gets. We have set local priorities, mm-hmm. and I encouraged when I was with the farming group the other day. They're looking for someone to do some work in agriculture. I said, apply. Yeah. Canada 150 is coming up. Apply. Mm-hmm. There's Norwood Fair. Apply.
Yep.
There's lots of opportunity.
Anything big coming yet for when you think of the 150? Anything big yet, or is it sort of all under?
I understand that co-chairs have been announced for the Coburg, or maybe it's the county.
Yeah.
I think it's
but
Coburg.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, that's all I'm hearing so far.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there is obviously so many things that people are concerned about. I know we were, Pete and I were talking about the perception that some people have out there about the Prime Minister's response to the recent attack in Burkina Faso. But the government's moving forward with locating and resettling refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a little bit about how that has impacted Northumberland, Peterborough South, or if it has at this point?
Well, a family who I met with yesterday is living in Coburg, and they arrived Boxing Day. Mohammed, his wife, and little girl who's just, I mean,
I think 18 months.
Yeah, cute as a button.
Yeah, no, great.
And anyways, my husband Tom and I went over and met with them and chatted. And there's about 35 more refugees scheduled to come into the riding within the next few weeks. That will be great because it will help make people feel comfortable. If you get to speak in your own language, and we have a prayer room in Coburg. It's in a basement of a store, and I think it would be great if we could find a way to sort of elevate it to main level.
Absolutely.
So there's lots of things I think we can do as a community to mm-hmm. To make it easier, I guess, for them to become part of our community in the broader sense.
I think they've been welcome with open arms.
That was my next question. Has there been any blowback from people?
I think, I've met them, Dave.
Amazing.
They lived across from me. They still are living across from me. So they live on my street, and great family. You can't have much of a conversation, but when you look into the Mohammed's eyes, the father, the husband, you can see how truly happy, blessed, welcome, grateful.
They
literally
ran with the shirts on their backs and what they could carry. And
really?
He showed us a picture of his home, and his brother was killed, and he has a sister-in-law who's a widow with four children, and he was helping to support them. He was a professional soccer player, played for Syria.
Okay.
And just lovely, lovely people. The outpouring of support, you're absolutely right. It has been amazing. Unfortunately, there will always be people who are less than, how do I say this?
Embracing?
I don't think there's a polite way to say it, so I won't say it. You get what I mean?
No, the bigots are out there. Let's be honest. You don't want to say it, but the bigots are out there.
And I guess I wish the people who have some of the very not Canadian comments to make, I wish they'd take a minute to actually listen to the story. I wish they'd actually take a minute to understand who these people are and who these families are. That they are, if you look at Syria, and I've said this before, Syria could be here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is had one of the most thriving middle classes of all the countries in the region. They live in homes and apartments, and they are professionals. These are not. They had an infrastructure mm-hmm. in their country that was fantastic.
It wasn't their wish to live anywhere else in the world except where they were living.
And for the most part, their goal really is to be able to go back home eventually. So.
Yes, unfortunately, in Syria's situation, we're not sure how when that could happen. But just imagine If you came home and you saw your home completely and all your neighbors mm-hmm. completely mm-hmm. annihilated, your home's gone. And, you know, if it burned down in a fire, we'd be devastated, but you could rebuild.
Yeah.
They're coming here understanding that there's a very good chance they'll never be able to rebuild there.
Yeah. I want to thank you for being my guest today, Kim. Kim Rudd has been our guest here for our live version of Life in the Fishbowl. My guest also in the studio, Pete Fisher, who, of course, is the namesake for Life in the Fishbowl. And I'm your host, Dave Glover. You're listening to Canada's only holistic political chat. I want to thank those of you that listen. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to give us a call or send us a message on Twitter. Here is our good friend Bob Marley with the Redemption Song. Yeah, I figured I'd close out with this one.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be right back after the news, folks.
Day rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs.